Welcome to Creative Block. I'm your host, V. It's just me today because this is going to be a little quick episode. This is going to be so much fun. I am so excited for this. We interview people in creative industries about their life, work, and hobbies while I doodle jam. We ask people on Twitter if they had specific topics they wanted us to discuss. We're also on Instagram now. Check out our Instagram and YouTube. We also ask for prompts there. It's really cool. We're multi-platform, as well as some drawing prompts. And today with us, we have Devin and Mick. Hi! Devin, the reason I didn't want to say your last name is that I need to ask you how to pronounce your last name on this show.
No problem. Great to meet you, V. My last name is pronounced Bungie, like sort of like it looks, Devin Bungie.
Oh, Bungie. That's really fun. I was going to say this, but then I was like wondering if there was like a little trick inside. And Nick Stanton.
That's right. That's an easy one.
Yeah. So you guys have a really amazing career writing for Disney. You wrote on live action shows and animated shows, and now you are the creators and showrunners of Haley's on It. I'm really excited for the show. I've seen the pilot and it's so fun and so cute. But before we talk a lot about Haley's on It, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your creative process and how you guys met and kind of like how you started your career writing.
Cool. Yeah, we met in college. We were at the USC Film School. We were both freshmen in the same screenwriting program, and we had a class together, and we were kind of the kids that messed around in the back of class and made jokes. And I don't know, they must have labeled us like the troublemakers or something, because we weren't in another class together for a number of years until we were seniors. And then we took a TV writing class, which was taught by the former showrunner of the Jeffersons, Jay Moriarty, who encouraged us to, you know, write a script together. That was sort of the format of that class. And it worked out. We learned that we had like really similar sensibilities. We're both from like small towns and the kind of the middle of nowhere, but we loved the same TV shows and stuff like that. And, you know, it just felt like we, you know, clicked, and we found that we wrote well together. And so after graduation, we both worked jobs that weren't, you know, we weren't some of those people that got into the business right away. You know, there were some tough years, and, you know, working side jobs. I worked in a mailroom. I think Devin worked in tech support for a couple of years, but all the while we were writing. And, you know, we were able to get an agent, and through just a lot of hard work and ups and downs, we eventually got our foot in the door at Disney. And it was actually in animation. I know we've worked in live action since, but our start was at TVA, and we were on staff of a couple shows there, The Replacements and Emperor's New School. And yeah, we've been writing together ever since.
That's so cool.
Cool.
How long would you say, was it years, months, like between the moment when you guys graduated until the moment you like got your agent? Because you got your agent before you got your first job, right?
Correct. Yeah. We were actually lucky because our professor, Jay, who Nick mentioned, former showrunner of the Jeffersons, he was sort of also our mentor, and his agent when he was working had a son who was an agent at a small boutique agency, and sent over our stuff that we had written mostly at school. And we were lucky enough, he responded to it. And with Jay's recommendation, you know, that helped a lot. We were able to get our agent right away. But it was several years after that we got our first paying job.
Two or three years.
Devin remembers.
We won't give dates, but yeah, it was over 3 years.
I think it's really cool to hear, because I feel like, you know, it can be just like a lot of pressure to graduate and then be like, you know, like I gotta land a job right away. And it's cool to hear that you both kind of, do you feel like having these like different experiences, like the mailroom and the IT, kind of like helped you kind of have more life stories? Like, did you kind of use these experiences a little bit in your script, or like, where do you draw inspiration from the most, life or TV?
Both. Yeah, I'll say one thing I'll add is, you know, one of the first jobs I did out of college, I worked while I was in college, I sort of paid the bills with working in the IT department at USC. And then I thought, one of the other things I thought, well, if I don't ever get a job TV writing, I love video games as well. So I got a job working at a video game company just outside of LA as a QA testing video games. And I was like, oh, this is gonna be awesome. You know, I could literally just get to play video games all day. And it was the most soul sucking job. Like, it was three months? I don't know, maybe Nick knows, but like, it was literally playing a game that's so bad it reboots after like 30 seconds. You had a phone book sized list of what they called known bugs that they didn't want you to write up, but you were expected to find, you know, 10 new bugs every hour, even though you couldn't get the damn thing to start without it crashing. And like, you couldn't check your phone or your email or, you know, and it was just, I don't know, and on top of that, there was so much turnover, like literally every time I'd make a friend, they'd get laid off the next week or something. So it became one of those things I was begging to be let go. And after I survived another round of layoffs 1 week, I was like, I don't care. And I just walked in and said, I'm leaving. And then I left and I decided I wasn't going to do video games anymore. And that, but my point being, you know, it took me a little bit to get back to it, but I realized there's a lot of things I do love about video games, and that was as long as you approach it from the playing side. That was one of the main reasons we created a show called Gamer's Guide to Pretty Much Everything, which was about essentially a professional video game player. But I don't know. It was seeing both sides of the world really kind of shed a lot of light into the creating of that show.
So cool. Like, so when you were, I want to ask you guys both about pitching and also how often you would be writing scripts. But I'm just going to go into pitching. When you were pitching, your show, a guide to, gaming, were you like using your experience as part of the pitch? Were you like, oh, this was like part of what I did, or were you kind of pitching it through more of like a story perspective, like kind of like, you know, more like the nuts and bolts of like, oh, this is our characters, and like, you know, like the more traditional pitch, or did you kind of like pitch it more through like your experience?
Yeah, honestly, both are really important. I, you know, you have to have a good story, you have to have good characters, it has to be something that's engaging, and you know, the person you're pitching to has to get it. But if you can tie it to anything personal, that helps a lot. And it also, especially when you're young, I think anything that makes it seem like if this is a story that only you can tell will make a huge difference. If there's some aspect, oh, because, you know, I grew up here, or my family is this, or I worked here, you know, any of that kind of stuff that makes it like, well, we're never going to find another person that has all those experiences to write this show. If it hits both of those check boxes, that's the best way to do it.
That's really cool. I like that. I like that you're really highlighting these are all, because it's easy for people to forget that our experience is unique. So like the way you kind of described it, like this is where I'm from, and this is how my family's like, and this is what the town I grew up in was kind of like the vibe and stuff. And that's already unique. So I think that's really cool. I wanted to ask you guys real fast, like, so when you guys were kind of like, you had your agent and you still wanted to break in, how often would you write a script together? Were you trying, did you self-impose like some kind of a deadline, kind of like, oh, we need to have like a new spec every couple of months, or like, were you focusing more on specs or originals?
It's a good question. Would I think write a script probably every couple months, and we at the time focused more on, because I think we had maybe an original pilot, but we wrote a couple specs, and this will date us at the time, but it was King of Queens and a Scrubs, I think, and we found that we were really good at capturing the voice of a show. Like, you know, we could just, you know, kind of get what the characters were. And we did a lot of research and watched every episode, obviously. And they were good specs. And they ended up, you know, getting us a lot of meetings. But yeah, like we said, we were both working day jobs at the time. As part of my mailroom job, I was working sort of in a Hollywood mailroom. Part of your job was delivering scripts to the actual production company. Like, you would actually drive and drop off scripts. And we were also taking meetings, you know, during at that same time. So sometimes I wouldn't want to, you know, have them see me being a delivery person. So I would, you know, put a hat on and put the script down at the front door and then go back that afternoon for a meeting at the same production company. So,
oh, that's so funny. Did you like have like a different like costume? Like, oh, now I'm in a suit.
Yeah, I would wear the blazer. This is the look I would have for a meeting, but you know, to pay the bills, I had to be a delivery person to that same company. So.
That's so funny. That's really cool. Oh man, one of the cool things of having both of you guys here is that you have the show Haley's on It that's premiering. So at the time of we record this episode, like way in advance, everyone who's like listening. So the show hasn't like yet premiered, but when the episode comes out, it's airing right now. So definitely check it out because it's a lot of fun. I watched the pilot. It's really, really cute. And the characters are like so endearing, and there's just like so much packed in this pilot. Like, not only do we get to meet these like adorable characters, but on top of that, we kind of have a feeling for like the full show, like what the goal of the show is going to be, and like the kind of like comedy that we're going to see, and also all of the kind of like adventures that are awaiting us as an audience. I'm trying not to spoil too much in the episode, but I wanted to ask you guys, how did you come up with the idea for Haley's on It? Like, what was that like for you guys to kind of like come up with that idea? And like, I want to talk about that. You know, the very first moment you get the idea, when it comes from it comes from like nowhere, right? And then suddenly there's like a bud of an idea. Like, kind of, what was that moment like?
Well, what really happened when we were visited by future versions of ourselves? No, honestly, it was one of those things where we realized we were on a development deal at Disney at the time. And we were just sort of thinking, like, what kind of shows did we really love growing up? And one of the things we kept going back to is like, we loved like when you could get a lot of comedy, you know, from something with huge stakes, but with small actions or whatever. Like, for example, like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, like the whole goal of that movie is essentially to save the future of the world, they have to pass their history test, which we thought was pretty hilarious, just sort of as a small, you know, small Seinfeld level, you know, problems, but it has these huge ramifications in the future. And combining that with, you know, and there's a number of other shows we can think of where like, there's just ordinary, regular, relatable characters who have to, that are thrown into these extraordinary circumstances. A show like Futurama, or movies like Back to the Future and Terminator 2, things like that, where it's just like, I don't know, there's something very fun and relatable about being kind of thrown into that experience. So that was sort of the germ of this idea, as we were trying to think of, you know, we were putting ourselves in the, you know, we wanted a character that was a, you know, 14-year-old kid who was sort of being pushed out of her comfort zone. And we thought, oh, you know, what she was making a list of everything that she ever, you know, thought she wanted to do, but, you know, was never really planning on doing it, or was, you know, because a lot of us do that, right? Something, you know, I want to do this someday, but I probably won't. So I'll just put it on a list. And then if I get around to it, I'll do it. But then if we had the added element of, what if you found out later, not only are you destined to do everything, you are capable, and it leads to great things, and the future of the world essentially ends up in a better place because this was the first step towards you becoming a great person. We thought that put some really fun stakes on all these otherwise innocuous items.
Yeah, I remember one other thing in the very early process. We didn't have the whole idea, but I think we had this idea of a scene where this character, who we now call the professor, but you know, bursts in and tells our main character Haley, you know, all this, like, just dumps all this information on her. But we thought it would be funny if they just kind of keep getting sidetracked, right? You know, like, I don't know. I mean, a version of this scene is in the pilot, but just the tone of it was, you know, she'll throw out some thing, you know, and there's a Haleytonium. Wait, is that an element? Is that my name? You know, it's just like a 2-minute scene where it's just a total information dump about, like, and then, you know, she gets sucked back into a portal. I don't know. We just thought that was kind of, that would be kind of like a funny scene. And then we ended up making an animation test out of that scene, which sets up a lot of the series too. But, you know, and then we just sort of added characters onto that. You know, what if she had this best friend, Scott, and it was kind of a Jim and Pam kind of relationship. And then this character of Beta, who's going to be one of the main characters, you know, kind of came from that too. And so, yeah, it just sort of grew from there.
That's really cool. And oh man, I love that scene too. I remember watching the pilot when there's like the professor coming in, kind of info dumping, but it's still really funny. I think it's like really clever, because I was just like, oh man, because I would say it's kind of like a high concept show, because there's like time travel in it. I mean, I guess the time travel element is just that character coming in, giving all the information. I don't know if there's going to be more time travel later, but I guess just that element kind of, I would say, puts it in like a little bit of a high concept show. How do you pitch that? Because I know it's kind of hard sometimes to pitch time traveling ideas.
Yeah, and we sort of purposely, you know, our goal was never to make it a time travel show. Mm-hmm. We thought we wanted a show that was very grounded. Like we said, we really like quote ordinary characters in crazy mm-hmm. circumstances. So like, we wanted to keep it pretty much exclusively set in present day. It takes place in Oceanside, really pretty mm-hmm. part of Southern California. And the craziness kind of comes to our characters, and then they have to deal with it. So yeah. And, you know, speaking to that scene and the high concept, in a way it worked out, because this is sort of after you pitch a show and sort of get people interested. This is now the development process. Like, we knew that the only way the show would get sort of greenlit or like get people hooked is if we could explain it to them very quickly. So like Nick said, we did an animation test, we knew at Disney they'll pay for like a 2-minute sort of animation test. So we did everything we could to just cover that moment where Haley essentially learns all the stuff that you know, she's going to do and has to do, and sort of set it up, but, you know, try to come up with a way to do it in a fun way. So it's quick, it's informative, but you also, you know, you get this sort of comedy tone and action tone and all that. So it worked out very nicely that the show could be pretty well encapsulated in those. I think it ended up being 3 minutes. We had to ask for a little extra time, but it could be encapsulated in that kind of scene. Which is sort of in the first episode, in a version. I think it's a little longer now. We were allowed to let it breathe, mm-hmm. but it was able. You know, we sort of were able to condense sort of the bigger mythology into that short concept, which helped a lot.
Yeah, and you know, one thing we also wanted to do with the pilot was, you know, it's one of, I think, 4 episodes that we did in the first season that are I guess two-parters or 22-minute episodes, and we used the first episode really just to set up the whole idea of what the series is, and, you know, who the characters are and what the rules are and everything like that. And then, you know, purposefully, so we don't have to do that necessarily every episode, you know, most of the episodes are 11-minute episodes after that, so it could just sort of be an adventure. She's got a list item that she has to do. It's, you know, spend all your old gift cards or something like that. And then from that little thing, they've got to go on a road trip because the one Butterburger restaurant is, you know, that is still in existence is 2 states away and stuff like that. And it kind of goes from there. But, you know, sort of setting up the series allowed us a lot more freedom in subsequent episodes to, you know,
that's really
not have to lay all that pipe.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's really, I was wondering if that was going to be a 22 minute show or like an 11 minute. So that's really cool to see that you had a 22 minute to set up the whole show, and then you're like on 11s. Yeah, that's what I really liked about that pilot too. I was like, oh, I can see how this can be like a pretty versatile show. And but obviously we're going to have our main cast that we already love, Haley Scott and Beta. they were so fun together. I want to see, yeah, I'm really excited to see more of Beta. What was kind of like you guys' idea having him? Is he kind of like the conscience that keeps Haley on the on track?
He serves a few purposes. I mean, one, we liked keeping sort of a science fiction element that sort of ties us to the bigger concept of we have access to the future technology, I guess. He also was, most importantly, it sort of gave us a way of sort of having influence on what list items are going to be accomplished and where they all are, so we don't have to kind of constantly bring out the paper list and kind of look through it and stuff. He can mm-hmm. calculate, you know, all these probabilities and kind of encourage her to, well, the fair's in town this week. You have to go ride every ride at the county fair or something similar. It also allows us to know, you know, she's trying to put off an item. No, that has dangerous consequences. And, you know, this is the windows are closing, things like that. So he's just sort of a character that really helps sort of keep those stakes at the forefront. And he's also super funny. Gary Anthony Williams plays the character and brings just an incredible amount of comedy and just his attitude and stuff, just playing off, you know, these two regular teens who can get very distracted and love to do goofy, dumb things together. And he's mostly all business, but slowly starts to find his own interests and things that sort of can distract him as well.
That's really cool. Oh man. Yeah, I really love him. I was just like, before the show started, I was like, oh, I hope we get plushies of him. He's so cute.
We do too. My kids have already asked for Beta plushies for Christmas.
So, oh really?
Yeah.
You have to make that happen now.
Yeah. Already got him on my phone here. Got a little sticker. So but yeah, if any consumer products people from Disney are listening, Beta plushies are going to be, yeah. would be a huge hit, I think.
That's so cute. And so I want to kind of hear a little bit from you guys. So you had the little 2 minute clip that you had for Haley. And then once you showed that and everybody got excited, what's kind of like the next step after, like, because that's kind of like a proof of concept, right? That's kind of like it's like kind of like this is how it's gonna kind of look and feel like, and like how much from a 2 minute clip can you quote unquote like change? Like, do you feel like it were you making it thinking like, oh, it's gonna stay like this for the show, or is there like room for R&D still, kind of like more room for like changing the art and room for changing the story still? Kind of, I want to understand a little bit that process, I guess, from that to the next step. And, you know.
Yeah, well, we actually did, there were sort of two things that we worked on simultaneously. One was the 2 minute, you know, clip of basically that scene. And what was nice was we were able to get that fully animated and it was in color and everything like that. The other thing that we did was an animatic, and I'm sure your audience knows what that is. You know, it's a sort of a storyboard, but you know, you get the actors' voices and things like that. And that was, I think we had a 14 minute animatic or something like that. So we were able to show, and I think it worked out well because, you know, there's a testing process and, you know, research and stuff like that. But we were able to show kids the 3 minute animation thing. So they knew who the characters were. They knew what the show looked like. And then we could show them the animatic. So they still had the idea in their head. I think sometimes if you just show an animatic, it can be kind of difficult. They're like, you know, because these are 7-8 year old kids. They're like, is the show going to be in black and white? Like, no, you got to use your imagination. It's going to be different.
Yeah.
So We showed those two things to, you know, an audience. We did some testing, some focus testing, and it ended up getting a really, really positive response. You know, we produced most of it during the pandemic. So there was like some,
oh, wow. Yeah. That's right.
Voices, and, you know, we just kind of cobbled some things together, but, I think we sort of told the story in a way that kids got and got them excited about it.
And to your question, the whole purpose of that, honestly, is R&D. You know, mm-hmm. not only are all the people that are deciding whether or not they want to make a show out of this thinking and seeing and deciding if they like it, what they see, but like Nick said, all the kids that we, you know, they did testing for boys and girls up like three different age groups. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, they always have a lot of feedback. Honestly, we've done, you know, this is now our third show we've created and mm-hmm. been in the testing process. And it was pretty minimal changes, especially considering, you know, we sort of we're working with, you know, development artists and stuff who are just sort of pinch hitting for us. They're all super talented, luckily, and did a great job. But, you know, there is definitely a growing process on the show, and we got a little bit of feedback and implemented that. But then, you know, once people realize, yeah, we think there's a show here and the kids are going to get behind it and all that, then we sort of got the final sign off to make a series, and we figured out a lot more stuff as far as that's what you worry about, producibility and how mm-hmm. much, you know, we were pretty ambitious in our pilot because, you know, we kind of have to be to sell it, and we wanted to kind of explore that world, but then you have to be a little more responsible with number of characters and voices and backgrounds, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to consider just from a more practical sense once you're actually in series.
Yeah, and talking about being responsible with going into series, how is your experience different from running a show in live action to running a show in animation? Because I feel like both of them, you have to be responsible, like you said, but I'm guessing in different ways, right? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, there's actually a lot of crossover, I think, in terms of, first of all, I mean, I think a good story is a good story, you know, and the elements of telling a good story are there, whether it's a live action show or an animated show. Mm-hmm. You know, I think luckily we worked in animation before, so we sort of had a background for it. You know, a lot of people, I think, well, it's animated, so you can do whatever you want. Yeah. You know, you have a football stadium full of people and stuff like that. It's like, no, it actually has to be drawn by people. You know, I know they don't have to build a football stadium, but that's a lot of stuff. Yeah. You got to design those people who are in the football stadium and things like that. So, yeah, you know, the producibility of it was, and it's exactly like Devin said. You know, we did the animatic of the pilot without really taking those things into consideration. You know, it was sort of a sales tool. And then once you actually get to, you know, the episodes themselves, you know, you've got to be responsible. You know, like on our live action shows, we knew the rules, right? There were two main sets and a swing set every week. And, you know, occasionally we could kind of maybe go outside or do a location thing, but, and a lot of our writing staff has had a live action background too. So they were pretty good when we gave them an edict. There was a point in the season where we were, you know, just doing too many backgrounds and, you know, ambitious, you know, it was good, but we sort of had to scale back, but, people really, sort of took the note and took their live action experience of, okay, what stories can we tell maybe in our existing sets? And I'll say, like, one of my favorite episodes of the season, it'll come up mid-season, is this episode Kissed Opportunities, which is takes place totally in Haley's backyard, but she's trying to host a cool party, but she does it in her kind of dorky Haley way. And somebody brings a party game that may be too mature for the party. And I don't know, it's just all about all the character dynamics, but it was all shot in one location.
Oh, nice. Kind of like almost like a bottle episode, but in a backyard. So
exactly.
That's really cool. I like that you mentioned in live action, you guys have to be very conscious of sets. So it's interesting to hear that there's a little bit of that can be useful for animation as well.
Yeah, honestly, all producing any show, there's you just have to know what your limitations are and what your constraints are, and sometimes that's a benefit, you know, like if we wanted someone to you know, step on an airbag and get thrown in a live action show, that's a lot harder to do than in animation, you know. Or you know, there's just certain things you can do in animation that are easier and certain things in live action that are a little easier, but you know, once you know the parameters, you can really find the funny in any situation.
Can you give some examples to illustrate that? I think that would be really fun to hear, like what's the big like no-no in live action and something that's very innocuous in live action and that's really hard in animation.
Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, okay. Well, in live action, I'll say one thing that was very could be very hard was you know, like a lot of stunts or whatever, like, you know. This episode ended up looking good, but there was an episode in one of our live action shows where they're baking these eclairs and, you know, like custard, you know, like was supposed to like squirt out of them. And it was this big set piece and stuff like that. But, you know, you get there on the day and the squirting mechanism doesn't work. And, you know, then you're like, what do you do? And I don't know, you've got to kind of pivot. Whereas in animation, like a scene like that, I think you could probably do pretty easily. But there's probably things that are true in the other direction too. So anyway, Devin, what were you gonna say? Sorry.
Yeah, I was just gonna add. There was one show we tried to get done on our last live action show where a character essentially went out on a boat and got lost at sea. But we could not convince the network that we could make a convincing water. That would have had to be all digital and. You know, the set would have been the boat itself, but like it would have been a lot of work, but and we ultimately didn't end up doing it. But now we like even in one of our first episodes, we have Scott and Haley quickly go out onto a boat hunting a fish for they're trying to make the best fish tacos in Oceanside. But that's actually, you know, all daylight out on a boat is actually incredibly easy to do in animation. It's, you know, there's sky and water and a boat and it ended up looking beautiful and was one of our first easier shows. So, you know, that's just sort of the difference of, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know why one would be easier than the other, but that was definitely one of them.
So funny. Yeah. Would you say you guys kept a list of like, oh, couldn't do that and are trying to put it in Haley?
Sometimes. Well, definitely. Sometimes we'll have episode ideas like from show to show, like where we really like an idea for an episode and it just doesn't quite fit for the show or for the characters or whatever, and then another version of that will end up making its way into another show.
Oh yeah, that's smart. Yeah. How do you guys keep your ideas together? Like, do you use the cloud or you just like email buddies or DMs or texts? How do you kind of keep like, or are you just always together and you're just talking constantly?
All of the above, I'd say. I'd say the majority of ideas we've had have disappeared into the ether, but the stuff we really like or makes each other laugh, we try to write down or remember somewhere.
Or tell someone on the writing staff and then they can keep a note of it. And we have a big wall of ideas too in our writer's room, which we put up on thumbtacks, and you know, if you ever need an episode idea, we can go back to it. So yeah, we do all of those things.
That's cool. I was going to ask you about, because so this is your third show that you pitch and ran. What would you say kind of like, well, I guess, what if you were to give yourself some advice from the first time you pitched and ran, what would you tell yourself? Like, it could be anything, like, I don't know, like, don't stress out too much, or it could be like dream bigger. I don't know. What would be the advice you would give yourself?
Well, I'll first say that they're two very different things. I think pitching a show and then being, you know, running a show, two very different skills. I'll just say off the bat, pitching is, we hate it. You know, it's just something we have to do it because that's part of the job and that's what you have to do to get a show off the ground. But we are not, you know, we're writers by trade, right? We can write a really good script, but you know, the salesmanship of that is really tough sometimes. So what I found is helpful, and Devin kind of alluded to this, is, you know, connecting to it on a like a personal level, I think, is, mm-hmm. you know, he mentioned a gamer's guide, you know, he had a background working in video games and, you know, brought that experience there. And so we could, you know, pitch it with some authority and, you know, and I guess just believing in the idea, you know, yourself. And I think that's contagious in, you know, in terms of, you know, pitching an idea. Show running is sort of a different skill set, but I guess to your pitching question, you know, find a personal connection and you know, really get invested in it.
Yeah, one of the things we heard early on, and it proved true, was one, you're for every, I guess, good meeting, you're going to have 50 where nothing happens, or you don't do a great job, or it's just, you know, there's no connection or whatever. So expect a lot of just failure and just keep going. And then I forget who it was, another, I think it was another student of Jay's that told us, like, you have to be yourself times 10 in every meeting, you know what I mean? Like, you have to, like, find the most fun, engaging version of yourself, you know. And it's not that you're supposed to be fake or anything like that, but you just really have to kind of, in a small amount of time with somebody you don't really know, you might not even really connect with at all, but you have to act like, you know, you really want to be there and you really love them and you love this project and you love their project and, you know, any of that kind of stuff, I think is very helpful.
That's really funny that you bring that up, because I feel like that's something that's always, like, you know, like, I myself kind of pitch every now and then. I don't think I've nowhere near to the amount you guys have pitched, obviously, but I, you know, you get in these meetings and you meet someone and you're like, oh gosh, I kind of looked them up on IMDb or LinkedIn, but I don't know that much about them. But then it's like, kind of like, oh, how much do I ask them about themselves and how much do I talk about myself? And it's just kind of like almost like speed dating kind of experience. Exactly. So you're just like, oh. how do you prepare for, like, these kind of meetings? Do you just kind of, like, wing it, or do you have a little routine?
We try to keep in our pocket a few stories that either have worked or we think are sort of appropriate or funny or something, mm-hmm. just so that we have something to sort of fall back on if you know, if it's, you're running out of other things to say. But yeah, just kind of knowing who you're talking to and what you are trying to get across, whether if you're pitching something, obviously you want to get across your ideas, but if it's a general or something, just sort of selling yourself, that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
And we also try and do, you know, research before the meeting too, and find out, first of all, who the person is that we're pitching to, and also, you know, if there's anything we can glean, like if they're looking for a certain kind of project, you know, going back to Gamer's Guide, we kind of got clued in that they were looking for to do a show, something in the world of video games, and so we, you know, just kind of ran with that, you know, and presented it in a way that, you know, only it was a story that only we could tell. So I think doing your research, that and you know, we did that a little bit with Haley too. We kind of knew some elements that maybe the studio was looking for and things like that, but then pitched a story that we were really excited about and that, you know, that fit that as well.
I'll also say, you know, another thing I'd recommend is learning from your failures. Like, mm-hmm. like one of our first meetings, I think out of college, we met on a show that was about to get picked up. It was in the trades as this is one of the things we expect to go on. It was on a network show, it was a live action show with a showrunner who had a great track record and a star from, like, you know, a comedian and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we met with him and it was a great meeting. And he told us in the room, you know, yeah, we're going to hire you guys if and when we go. And we're like, sweet, this is easy, you know. But next week they didn't pick it up. They picked up something else. You know, they were like, well, okay, you know, it's easy though. And then we'll get another one, you know, and I think 2 years later, we're like, you know, I don't think we're necessarily going to just be given another job like that. So, you know, that's when we started realizing, you know, we might have to make our own work. You know, that sort of inspired us to sort of just start, okay, well, we can't just wait to get staffed. Because apparently that's sort of a lot of luck as well as your meetings and scripts and all that. So we started developing there. And then the first thing we developed was actually, it was somebody else's idea. It was some art that they had, but it was at our same agent. And we spent we signed on to kind of write up a script for it and sort of develop it into a show. We learned a lot doing that, but we got paid, I don't know, a pittance to work for about 18 months developing this thing. And eventually it got going and it went ahead, but sort of we had no credits at the time and there was not a lot of interest in us running it because we literally had just done some writing before. So, you know, we ended up doing 18 months of work for like $2,000 and realized, even though it was not a good payoff in the long run, like we did learn a ton about sort of developing a show, coming up with characters, filling out, you know, storylines, backgrounds, worlds, all that kind of stuff. So even though both of those, like on their surface, were like, oh, what a waste of time, what a pain in the butt, I can't believe we missed out on this opportunity, you know, we probably wouldn't be able to be where we are now if both of those things hadn't happened.
Yeah, I think that's super great advice, because I do feel like when you start out, like there is a little bit of that moment when you're like, oh, you got to kind of do the odd jobs. But then, like you were saying, like not only do you learn from it, but you're also probably making a lot of like connections as you're like working on that. Like, I don't know if like any of these connections that like paid off later in your career, like that you got through developing this project.
We definitely kept in contact with a lot of the showrunner of that first show that we almost got. We've been in contact. We never actually ended up working with him, but he's done a number of new shows, and he's kind of introduced us to other people and stuff like that. So that's been cool. Yeah, sorry, Nick, do you have a thought?
Yeah, I would say just another piece of advice is just be nice to people on your way up. I mean, you know, we were when we were trying to get our foot in the door, and when we worked our first few jobs, you know, not in any kind of phony way, just a genuine way, we really wanted to connect with people on the crew, you know, and we built friendships, right? And with young, you know, people and artists and writers who were doing the same thing that we were doing. And, you know, you'd be amazed how, you know, 15 years later, all those connections are still there. They still come up, and we have this sort of network of people that we can rely on. And, you know, it's kind of a small world at you know, at that point. And we're lucky in that sense. I feel bad for people who, you know, we have a lot of young artists and young people who are working on our crew, and we started off the show, started off production, and it was still the pandemic. And, you know, they never had that, at least for the first maybe year, I guess, of the show, didn't have that office experience of like being in person with other people and like, you know, meeting people and sort of creating a network, which was hugely valuable to us in our first few jobs. You know, we've worked with a lot of those same people, and you get to, you know, and even when we're in a position to hire people, and that's what we think about, you know, have they done good work in the past? Are they good people? Are they, you know, and so that, you know, I think just be nice, make connections with people. You never know where your next job is going to come from. And, you know, what these connections will amount to.
Yeah. That's so true. I feel like so much of like, yeah, like you said, like the pandemic was so tricky because, for everybody's first job who was during the pandemic, then you only get to meet the people on your crew, but you don't get to meet the other people in the studio. And sometimes just like hanging out by the water cooler or like the coffee machine and just talking to people that are not on your crew, and then that's like connections that you build your network that way, and it's easier to find next jobs. But I mean, I think this is going to change soon. I feel like studios are bringing people back in. I feel like this is experience of like working from home is maybe coming to an end. I don't know. It's kind of back and forth, like the temperature on that. Just want to sneak in one question from one of our listeners. It's a short episode, everyone, so unfortunately we can't get through all of the questions. There was a lot of great questions from our Patreon listeners and from Twitter, but I think we're gonna go with Beat Linsbeard, our patron, who asked, can you tease us with anything about Haley, anything you guys want to tease about the show?
All right, what could we tease?
I'll say, you know, even though Haley is sort of an introvert who is scared to try new things. Early on in the season, she'll sort of realize she can and likes singing in front of people. And since we have an incredibly talented actress, Ellie Cravalho, as our lead, she continues to deliver, all sorts of awesome performances whenever we ask her to do some songs. So there will be more and more Haley performing as the season goes on.
That's so amazing. Yeah, like, it's so cool that there's like songs, like the song in the pilot is so funny. Technically it's the one in the ride, right?
Yeah.
I love that kind of humor where it's very much like, this is what's happening and you can't do anything about it. I don't know, I think it's really funny. I thought that was such a really, really fun episode. Thank you so much for like talking so much about like all of the nuts and bolts. That's like my favorite thing to talk about on Creative Luck. I think it was really inspiring. And I love what you, I think it was you, Devin, who said about like, for one good meeting, there's like 50 bad meetings. I'm like, that's such a good, piece of advice, like to not like feel, what's the word? It can be easy sometimes in this industry to feel like, oh no, nothing's working my way. And like, a little bit like sad about it, I guess. So like, that's a really good way to kind of keep the hope, and like to like learn from failures and like put out the best work. So I think that's really, really cool. The running gag on Creative Block is that I'm terrible at segues, and usually my co-host Sean is amazing. He finds the best way to like jump from a subject to another seamlessly. I lack that talent. I'm working on it, but I think I am going to close this episode of Creative Block. Like I said, it was going to be a short episode, but I was just so excited to hear about the process, all these amazing stories. I think that was so fun to hear how like you came up with that idea and how you pitched it and all the little like steps in development. So with this, that is the end of this Creative Block. Devin and Nick, thank you so much for being our guests and sharing your story. And thanks to your listeners. Follow us on Twitter. It's at CRTVBlock, but also on Instagram, because Twitter is having a hard time right now. So we are moving to Instagram, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. Huge thanks to our editor, Clements, for editing the podcast. Clements is also a video game beta tester, so she will relate to your story, Devin.
And I admire her greatly.
Yeah. And Marco, thanks to Marco for helping us produce the show. If you love our show, then support us on Patreon. It helps us pay for things like the Google Drive, the Zoom, and keep our amazing editor and producer paid. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews as well as bonus episodes. Click the link in the description of this episode. I have been your host, V, keeping creative, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks so much, V.
Thank you.